Hey friend, welcome to the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Emily Cleghorn. This podcast is for mamas navigating childhood trauma while also walking through mamahood. I'm so excited that you've decided to take some time out of your day to join me and tune in. I hope you find this podcast uplifting and empowering. Let's get to it. Hello, hello, my friends, and welcome to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I am so excited that you have taken some time out of your day to tune in and listen to this conversation. Today, I am excited to have Amanda Blackwood joining me. Welcome.
Hi, Emily. It's so nice to be here with you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. So let's dive right in. I'm going to get you to introduce yourself to our audience and share a little bit of your story and how you came to be working in this space.
So my name is Amanda Blackwood. I live in Denver, Colorado with my amazing husband, our six cats, which is a house full. Mm-hmm. And my life is amazing and beautiful, but it wasn't always that way. I am also a survivor of childhood trauma, human trafficking, and something called sport torture. A lot of people haven't even heard of.
Oh.
I've been through the ringer, basically. Mm-hmm. Early childhood trauma and abuse is usually a predecessor to those who are later on trafficked in life. And of course, it's important to understand what trafficking is. We have a completely skewed misconception of it, mm-hmm. thanks to the media and films and books and all this fiction stuff that exists. But human trafficking is defined by the Department of Homeland Security as the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain commercial sex acts or labor from the person. So if you notice some key things here, even though we think of trafficking as being in traffic, there's no mention of transportation. Mm-hmm. Human smuggling and human trafficking are two separate issues that often overlap, but still need to be addressed as separate issues. Mm-hmm. There's also no mention of money, so prostitution does not equal human trafficking and vice versa. And there's no mention of age. We automatically think that trafficking happens to young kids that are kidnapped off the streets by total strangers. In reality, only 1/4 of all victims are under the age of 18. Mm-hmm. And most are trafficked by people they already know and trust, like their parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, boyfriends and girlfriends. Kidnapping scenarios make up maybe 1-2% of all human trafficking cases. So I was trafficked 3 different times in my life. First time when I was 18, second time when I was 19, and the third time when I was 31 years old. The oldest person in recent years to be pulled out of trafficking right here in the state of Colorado, here in the USA, was in her 70s.
Oh my heavens.
So there's just kind of a brief overview of my life and of what human trafficking actually looks like and a little bit about the misconceptions that we have.
Yeah, that is. Thank you for clarifying that. My words are not working right now. So let's dive into that a little bit. So how do we identify if we are being trafficked? Because
that is such a good question.
What the media tells us and what actually is, those are two different things. Yes. So how do we tell if we are being trafficked?
We really need to dig in and understand that definition and understand that this isn't something that you can Google or look up on Wikipedia. These are fallible resources. Mm-hmm. You need to go somewhere like the Department of Homeland Security to get that solid definition and know that it comes from a legal authority. Not Google, not Wikipedia. Those are not legal authorities. But you have to start breaking it down and recognize what it actually means. So the use of force, fraud, or coercion is the first part of that definition. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been forced to do something that you don't want to do, like any kind of sex act, or if you've been forced to do an entire day's work or even an hour's worth of work that you really didn't want to do. Not the kind that you get paid for. You just don't want to go to work. It's completely different from that. but that can be and is often considered to be human trafficking. It's the same thing with fraud and coercion. You know, if you're frauded into doing a job, you're offered $20 an hour and only paid $5 an hour. That's considered wage theft, and that's also human trafficking. So there's a lot of little facets and pieces of this that we have to really dial down and focus on.
Yeah.
A big one a lot of people don't realize is that 85% of modern pornography is created using victims of human trafficking.
Oh my goodness.
That's a huge number. But think about that definition again. Force, fraud, or coercion to obtain commercial sex acts or labor from another person.
Mm-hmm.
So that would definitely be considered a commercial sex act.
Mm-hmm.
But force, fraud, or coercion, so if somebody is offered $10,000 to create this video and they're not paid at all, or if they are paid $9,998, that is a fraud that is still considered human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, I was being trafficked at the time, being held against my will in a place that I didn't want to be in anymore and forced to do things that I didn't want to do ever. And there were photos and videos taken of me and put up on pornography websites years later so that he was still making money off of me. That's another very common form of trafficking through pornography websites. There's also a huge, huge upswing of this on OnlyFans.
So how does one get out of human trafficking?
There are several different ways. For me, it was being smart and crafty and putting a plan in place. I grew up a child of the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved watching MacGyver. It was a big deal for me. And I learned so much from Richard Dean Anderson. I wrote to the man to thank him for saving my life, and he's never answered me, but I have to trust that he gets it and he knows. Mm-hmm. But I had to be smart. I had to think on my feet. At the time when all this was happening, the last time I was trafficked was I was 31 years old. I was living with somebody that I had known for 7 years. At the time, I didn't realize it was trafficking. I thought I had made bad decisions to trust the wrong person who, by the way, happened to be a police officer. At the time, I thought I was trusting the right people. But when they turn out to be the wrong people and you don't know that it's trafficking, you don't know who to go to for help. For one thing, he was a police officer. I couldn't exactly march down to the local police station and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people he were bringing over were judges and lawyers. I couldn't ask them for help.
No.
I had nobody. I had to rely on myself. Thankfully, now, because of all the falsehoods and the crazy myths, there are anti-trafficking organizations that are popping up all over the world now to be able to help people who are in that position like I was.
Mm-hmm.
There are several right here in the state of Colorado that I swear by. Now, every time one of my books sells, a percentage of the profits that I make goes to those anti-trafficking organizations that I'm tied to. They're doing the hard work. They need the money. I'm going to help that.
Yeah.
But not knowing what resources are available to you is the same thing as not having those resources.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we live in the age of the internet, and it's not that difficult these days to look it up. If somebody's listening to this podcast, they have a smart device of some kind, whether it's a computer, a tablet, a phone, whatever it is. Use that to go on the internet to find the resources available to you. And if you don't know if it's human trafficking or not, talk to the human trafficking hotline. They can guide you through it. If you're sure it's not and you think it's domestic violence, reach out to the domestic violence shelters around you. Get the help that you need.
Yeah. Yeah. How has your healing journey been?
Oh my gosh, it's been such a roller coaster. You know,
as one
ask
is.
Me, people ask me, how did you get from point A to point B? And I said, well, that was the easy part. Getting from point A to point Q was the journey.
Yeah.
It's not linear. It is not
definitely
easy.
Not.
And there are stages to trauma
mm-hmm.
in, that mirror those of the stages of grief.
Oh boy, do they ever. And there's grief in the healing of trauma.
Absolutely. Trauma changes our brains. It mm-hmm. changes who we are as people. When that happens, we have to acknowledge that. We have to learn eventually how to accept that. Then we have to grieve for the person that will never be. Mm-hmm. That person is gone. You have been changed forever because mm-hmm. of what has happened to you. That doesn't mean that you cannot go on to have a productive, wonderful life and you can't still chase the same dreams and goals and aspirations. Mm-hmm. It just means that you're different now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just pretend like this doesn't exist. It will mm-hmm. always exist. You have to grieve for that person that you've lost.
Yeah.
So the stages of trauma and the stages of grief, they go through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. But that doesn't mean that you go through all of these in a row. You're going to bounce around like a rubber ball in a concrete room. Eventually, you're going to land where you need to be, hopefully. If you find yourself stuck, you might need to get some counseling and some therapy to be able to get to that point.
Yeah, those stages aren't all neat and pretty and tied up in a little bow. It doesn't work that way. Sorry, friends.
Right. I had to hit rock bottom before I was willing to go out and look for the help that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
I was dirt poor at the time. I was barely scraping by. I reached out to an anti-trafficking organization out here in Colorado, and they paired me up with a therapist. I'm not kidding you. I traumatized this woman so bad, she left the industry forever. And I ended up having to get paired with a second therapist, and she was wonderful. It's important that if you do end up getting help, like therapy or counseling, you want to talk to somebody who has experience in that area or a specialty mm-hmm. in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And my first therapist mm-hmm. was brand new to the world of therapy. She had no idea what she was signing up for, talking to a survivor of trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
The second therapist had already worked with several and was working on her PhD. And I knew enough at that point about myself to go into her sessions and tell her, I'm not looking for a Band-Aid. I'm looking for a shovel. Somebody threw me in a hole I need to dig out of.
Mm-hmm.
So don't give me any kind of medications or anything like that. I'm not ready for that.
I'm not looking for that.
Yep. That's a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And do not treat me like I am fragile and easily breakable. Because if I was mm-hmm. going to break, I'd have done it already. Mm-hmm. For Pete's sake, I was tortured. You know, I didn't break. I'm like James Bond, man.
Yeah, I don't need your help to break. If I was going to break, I'd have done it long ago.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It is a personal belief of mine that it is incredibly important that if you are going as a trauma survivor or a trafficking survivor, that if you're going to speak to a therapist or a counselor or somebody, they have experience in that area. Because if they don't know how to help you. It's like taking your car to McDonald's for an oil change. They're not going to know how to help you. And chances are they may cause more harm than good.
Absolutely. And if you run into somebody who is wanting and kind of pressuring you to have them as your therapist, and they don't have experience in that area, that means they're using you as a bit of a guinea pig.
Yeah. Red flag.
It's important to recognize that. Yeah.
Red flag. So what, out of going from A to Q was your journey. What tips can you share with our audience that someone could use to help make their journey from A to Q a little easier?
Educate yourself as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are really worried and cautious about going into therapy. There used to be a whole lot of stigma about it. There's not as much anymore, but there's still some. Mm-hmm. And if you're nervous about that, look up these details yourself. This mm-hmm. was a big thing that helped me. I started researching what is trauma. Mm-hmm. And I fell down this rabbit hole of the stages of trauma and then trauma reactions, then finding that there's long-term consequences to not dealing with them and that you're reinforcing mm-hmm. bad behaviors when you don't mess with them and change mm-hmm. them, and then how to change them. I fell down this massive rabbit hole and I started learning so much. Mm-hmm. Therapy basically got me over the last couple of speed bumps that I needed help with, but I had done a lot of work before I got there. It's also really important to recognize that one of the major trauma responses that most people have is a need for control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because in the situation where we were traumatized, we had no control whatsoever. Even if we think at the time that we did not. Mm-hmm. There was no control. And we're searching for that sense of control, thinking that if we can control everything around us, we will never experience trauma again. And that's not the way it works. You know, you're rolling through life, basically sitting in the backseat of a bus, trying to avoid the potholes when you're trying to control everything around you. You can't do that. You cannot control where life goes, but you can control your reactions to things. And there are little things that you can control. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people to try and find a creative outlet of some sort. For me, it was writing, painting, and cooking. I just recently in June came out with my first ever cookbook. It's my 13th book total, but it's called Surviving in the Kitchen, Recipes for Life, Love, and a Full Stomach. And that's what it is. You know, whether you're writing or painting or writing poetry or writing music or singing, you are creating a recipe for your own life and your own love and your own sense of control. These are huge.
Yeah. Yeah, my creative outlets are writing and sewing, and I dabble a little tiny bit in scrapbooking, not a whole lot. It's been a while. I've got two baby books for my kids that have been sitting on the shelf for 5 years and 4 years, and they'll get done before they're 18. So but yeah, a creative outlet, a space where you can let things out is huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have been a writer most of my life. This is for a long time, it was a creative outlet for me. Eventually, I needed it as part of my therapy. I tell people all the time that when I wrote my autobiography, I basically gave all of that trauma a physical body separate from me so mm-hmm. I could set it down on the shelf and walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer controlling me. It's mm-hmm. separate from me. It still exists. It's still there. It's always going to be there. Mm-hmm. And now it's out for the whole world to see it, just as it would mm-hmm. be, you know, when I became a public speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't control me. I control it.
Yeah.
I use it as a positive tool now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what writing does for me.
And that's powerful as all get out. Yeah. That is powerful as all get out. What a way to reclaim your power.
It took a long time to get there, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You
know, I said I had to hit rock bottom first. In 2019 is when I found out that I was made famous on a pornography website. When that happened, my whole world crumbled. That's when I got the therapy that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
I also reached out to another group that was able to pair me with pro bono legal services that were going out and trying to take all the stuff down off the website. And it was then that I realized that he had connected all of it to every social media page that I had, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it didn't matter, everything. People could find me and stalk me.
Oh my goodness.
At first I started trying to pull all this stuff down and, you know, make it to where only friends could see anything, deleting profile pictures, whatever I could to try to go into hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, no, people are finding me. If he's going to make me famous, they're going to find out why. So when I first started speaking, I was really quiet. It was like the little tiny voice of a mouse trying to eke its way out of me. I'm a survivor of trafficking. And people started wanting to hear more, and they started really kind of bolstering me up and supporting me and saying, no, you need to tell about this. You need to speak mm-hmm. up. And I was scared to. I was very scared to.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I did, the stronger I got.
Mm-hmm.
The more I owned my story, the less he owned me. And he, to this day now, is more scared of me than I ever was of him.
Wow. That's awesome. The other thing I wanted to say was educating yourself is huge. It is so empowering. It was the method that I used to educate myself about hormones and fertility and trauma and all of the stuff that was going on with my body. And it was huge when I connected the dots between childhood trauma and infertility.
Yes. Isn't it incredible? Yeah. Yeah. It changes your whole world learning about these connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went through all of this stuff, and in 2015, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. In 2019, I was diagnosed with chronic hives. In 2021, I found out I had thyroid disease. And just this past year, my hives came back and I found out that I have Lyme's disease and mold poisoning. All of it, every last drop of it, is connected to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a bizarre world. I tell people all the time, you know, if you're not ever going to buy any of my books, that's fine. Buy at least one book. The Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm.
It does. A phenomenal book.
It does. Stress has killed my digestive system. Like,
yeah. Yep, me too. What do you eat when all that's happening?
I know, right? I'm so hungry. What do I eat?
And yet, I'm still gaining weight. That's the thyroid. Yep.
So how can our audience connect with you further if they would like to do so?
So the easiest way is through probably either my website or my Facebook page. And if I wasn't on Facebook as much as I am, I would probably write more than two books a year. And my website, growthfromdarkness.com, there is a calendar there where people can sign up for one of my free monthly webinars on a trauma recovery boot camp. So if they want to learn more about where they are in their trauma journey, they can just attend one of these really quick 30-minute easy seminars, learn more about the process, and find more resources for help. If they just want to connect with me personally, Facebook is the best place to do that. So if you just look up Amanda Blackwood, the survivor, I will pop up real easy in a bright red top. You can't miss it. Kind of matches my hair.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our audience. I can't wait to continue our conversation. I think there's so much more that we could talk about. So thank you so much for joining me today, Amanda.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Emily. This is a blast.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. If you resonated with what you heard, please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and share it with a friend who would also benefit, because we rise together. Until next time, Mama, keep shining.